Hi, this is Modern Joseph, folks, and you're listening to the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. Though, to be honest, Joe and Nick haven't got a clue what they're on about.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 306 of Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page.
Absolutely incredible. Thank you. That was such high energy. Well done.
Look, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't have high energy at 8 o'clock in the morning. Look at me. I've just got out of bed. Literally got out of bed.
Well, one, you do it that way every time. So, you know, it makes no difference. Two, listeners, Nick is in his dressing gown. Thank goodness. Yes.
Well, it's ridiculously early. Honestly, it's like last week, a couple of weeks ago, it's all doom and gloom, we've got no work, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is the only time we can mate this week.
Well, and whose fault is that? I was ready at the normal time. Someone was out gallivanting. So,
I was in London. I went to a really good church. I'll talk about it next week.
Okay. Yes, and also, did you have your MRI as well?
I did have my MRI. Mm. Weird.
Yes.
And I will follow up on that next week. It's just a weird sensation, really. Yeah, it's, sure. It's very strange. And also, here's the thing, like 8 o'clock in the morning, I've got my coffee. Of course, it's decaffeinated now because I'm not allowed caffeine.
No.
So I can't even wake myself up. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I really am.
Yeah. Anyway, so dear listeners, all 17 of you, we have an interview for you this week.
Yeah.
With Martin Joseph.
Yes.
Singer, songwriter.
Yes.
Possessor of what I think looks suspiciously young hair for his age.
Well, I have to confess, having done this interview, which I was so excited about, I found him slightly annoying.
Right.
If I could be completely candid with it, he was disappointingly lovely. You know, you think, look, you're good looking. You've got an incredible career, amazing back catalogue. You're so talented. And I genuinely think he is writing his best stuff now. Surely you're going to be some moody, grumpy what's-name when it comes to an interview. Sort of, I sort of imagine slightly irritated at having been asked to do it.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was hoping for.
Yes, you were hoping more for the tortured artist.
Yeah, that's what I wanted, because I don't think anyone should have all that going on. They should have one or two off that list. Not everything, but no.
Yeah.
No, he was absolutely delightful. He seemed so engaged and so easy to talk with and genuinely lovely to us as well. So, Martin Joseph, thank you. It was great.
So, before the interview, are there any church notices or matters arising or apologies for absence or anything like that?
I think it's probably about 4 days till the US election. So just a shout out to all our American friends and any listeners of the podcast there. May you be peacemakers, whatever happens on Tuesday.
Absolutely.
We're thinking of you. Yeah, that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we'll hold off on any sort of news or anything updates on us till next week. Let's just get into this interview. So set it up for us, Joe. How do you know Martin?
Well, I don't really, but shout out to Tim and Charlotte. I think Charlotte's known him pretty much all her life. So they were significant in setting it up. I mean, Martin came and stayed at our flat in Streatham circa 1990.
Okay.
I joked with him that it must have been the most, you know, uncomfortable night of his life. But fortunately, he didn't remember it. So that's good.
He was young and keen then. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. I saw him at the Greenbelt, I guess, back in the 80s. And then at the Mean Fiddler in London. I remember that because Simon Mayo was there. And it was kind of where the rich and famous kind of hang out to see new talent and stuff like that. So it was good. But anyway, obviously, in sort of preparation for this, I've had Martin Joseph pretty much on non-stop in my car for the last few weeks. I thought, well, I better gen up on all his catalogue because, you know, I've missed some of the albums along the way. And I have to say, the last few years, his stuff is absolutely incredible. Chapel Porth Beach, which I think I rather embarrassingly call Porth Chapel, even though I've been there, is unbelievably good. Cardiff Bay, Getting Older, Driving Her Back to London, you know, His songs are beautiful, soulful. I'm saying this in case anyone doesn't know Martin James. It's sort of sometimes quite melancholic, but there's this string of hope going through it all. And he writes about family, the world, faith, you know, all of life. And I've become a real fan again. I mean, I really do think he's better than he ever was. Mm. And I've always loved songwriters who can tell stories. You know, I used to love Dire Straits' Romeo and Juliet or Billy Joel, Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. Those kind of songs. And he's a storyteller. He tells wonderful stories in his music, as well as just writing beautiful, beautiful songs. So, yeah, here we go. So it is my absolute pleasure to welcome to the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast the one, the only, the man described as one of acoustic's most original voices and most forward-looking of his generation of singer-songwriters. How about that? It's Martin Joseph.
Hello, Joe. How you doing?
That's fantastic. Listen, welcome. It's so good to have you here on the podcast. And I know many of our listeners are fans of yours, but just in case there's anyone who's never heard of Martin Joseph, I mean, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from, for a start?
Yeah, sure. I was brought up in a town called Penarth, which is just outside of Cardiff in South Wales. So I've always lived in Wales. I've travelled, been itinerant for the vast majority of my life, but I've always come back home to Wales. I'm a musician, I'm a songwriter. In my early days, more or less what I, you know, I was sort of into music from a very early age. But at the same time, my dad was quite a successful sportsman, played rugby for Cardiff and stuff like that. And he also played golf. So he started me playing golf when I was 10 years old. So actually my first drive, what I wanted to do with my life, I wanted to be the next Jack Nicklaus. He was my boyhood hero. And I got pretty good to a decent sort of level. You know, I played at, you know, in the British Amateur. I got to sort of a level where I was just, I was reserved for Wales at one point, that type of thing. So, I was off one handicap when I was 15 years old and doing pretty well at it. But I wasn't good enough, simply not good enough. You've got to be so brilliant, as it were. And then I suppose I'm really sort of condensing this into a very small view, but when I realized that wasn't going to happen, I began to focus a little bit more on. I've been playing guitar since I was 10 as well, so pretty shy boy, and the guitar, I think, gave me a little bit of a something to stand behind, as it were. You know, learned to do it at talking for me, and I made my way through life through that. And my earliest audience was a church audience, because I got involved in a youth club at a church when I was looking for a tribe back in my mid-teens. Yeah. And then after some years at that, decided that I needed to spread my wings a little bit and create and write in a more inclusive way, I suppose, that might touch everyone, and just not folk who had a religious view of the world or whatever it might be. Yeah. And in fact, I was quite disillusioned as well with those things that I thought were true, or the tenets of faith, as it were. And I wandered away a little bit. I stepped out of the back door in the kitchen while the party carried on in the front room, I suppose. I made my way in the music business and got signed by Sony Music, CBS Records, had a little bit of success with them, not the success they were looking for, but it crossed me over to a brand new audience. And I've been running with that ever since. Yeah. And my music focuses a lot on social issues. And we also
Tell us a bit about your inspiration for music, because I know there's personal experience, there's current events. What drives you to in your songwriting process?
There's no one strand that, in particular. I mean, there's something in me that's rooted in, I don't know if it's sense of the underdog in being Welsh or perhaps or whatever it is, but something in me that roots for those that don't have the same opportunities and chances as everybody else. The guitar has been my passport to discover. Going back to like the sort of shift in my emphasis, a lot of that was because the guitar was, it took me to some tough, very tough places where I sat with people where the things that I thought were solid became undone immediately, you know. And I didn't have I didn't have any answers, and I embraced questions and found that that was a much more healthy way of looking at things, really. And so my music has dwelt within that spectrum. Sort of, I suppose, you know, if you, someone who's listening is trying to grapple what I mean, a sort of Billy Braggish type of vibe.
Yeah.
Social issues, but still with an ear to the heart of the personal as well, you know. So my heroes were, you know, Dylan Springsteen, blah blah blah, you know.
I was gonna say you've been compared to Bruce Springsteen and John Mayer, yeah, but
which is quite ridiculous.
I mean, but... I had Bruce Coburn, but you know, not so famous, but still I think a strong influence. So it's fascinating to hear that. Yeah, and justice is a dominant theme of yours, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I, you know, again, just to clarify, when people compare me to those people, I don't know what to do with that, because it seems ridiculous to me. But yeah, I mean, you know, you can look at Bruce's work, you know, and there's a common theme of addressing social issues as well as personal issues, you know, within his music, and I like to find that balance. But it seems that I now have a reputation, really, for being something of a social conscious singer, as I'm getting always asked to, you know, represent this or that. Or a few years ago, Parliament asked me to write songs to commemorate the signing of the Magna Carta, you know. So I've got this sort of reputation now, I suppose, as a person who sings about social justice. And we followed that through too, because I also have a charity that runs alongside the work. So it's not just about singing songs. We're getting our hands dirty in other different ways as well, you know. So and that's a very unique charity, in that we don't work with one organization. We work with many across different subjects, and we change every 6 months. It's trying to. I write about those things that are important to me. My guitar is a cheap psychiatrist, really. You know, it's my way of dealing with anything that crosses my path. And I'd have been lost with it if I hadn't been able to express that. Then I don't know how I would have found my way through as such.
And how has the creative process for you sort of evolved through the years? Because I want to put this delicately, but you've been knocking around quite a while now. but I have to say, the music you make is incredible. I was listening to Chapel Porth and stuff like that.
Beach, getting right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, I love that beach.
Do you know it?
I do know it, yeah.
Well, that's crazy,
but I normally go to Perrenporth, a little bit above there, but yeah.
Well, two very weird things. Perrenporth, one of the first gigs I ever did was a beach mission in Perrenporth.
Oh, really?
years and years ago. But the strange thing is, this Chapelporth Beach, this was commissioned by Radio 2, the BBC, to write to commemorate the RNLI, their 200th year anniversary. And I was given the task of writing this song about Mark and Vicky, who in 2009 had been walking on Chapelporth Beach. She was pregnant with their first child. They got cut off by the tide. They said their goodbyes to each other, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I've never been there. So you have. I've never been to the song, the place that I wrote the song about. So, but I'm playing Penzance in a few months' time. So I'll definitely go and seek out Chapelporth Beach when I'm
and
down.
And remind us, is that the name of the album as well?
Oh, it's just an EP. I got quite a lot of coverage on Radio 2 with it and stuff. So we brought out an EP to sort of make the most of that, which it will be coming.
The point I was trying to make is you're still writing beautiful, beautiful songs with soul and depth and
thank you, Joe.
Storytelling that I just adore.
That means a lot, and I say this with a sense of humility, if I can find one, that I actually believe what I'm doing now is the best it's ever been. A lot of people sort of, you know, in my business sort of fade away or they rely on the past and they sing that, and, you know, no one's really interested in anything new that they want to do. But for me, I really feel that the songs and the level of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, is actually the best it's ever been.
But maybe it's because you never sold your soul to commercialism. I mean, it seems to me you've been writing stuff that matters for decades, actually.
Well, I don't know if I sold my soul. I mean, as I said, I did sign with Sony, and there was a certain amount of pressure to get that hit record. But I can't write these "Love You Baby, Won't You Baby" songs.
Yeah,
you
sure.
I can write about romantic love, and I have done. But just to sit down and do that every single time when you're trying to write a song, you know, I'd be bored out of my brain. You know, there's so much to say, so much to do. So. So I feel that I feel like what the knowledge that I've gained through the journey, through the through moving through decades of trying to get it right and failing, and then and I just don't mean writing songs, in life itself, and all that pours itself into my 64 years to the planet, so that I can now I can approach songs with that knowledge and with that hopeful, depth, as it were, or hopeful with integrity, so that when I'm singing it, the listener recognizes their own journey within mine, because we have an awful lot in common, and so therefore, I think a lot of entertainment is incredibly dishonest, isn't it? It's
For
great
sure.
fun, but it's just that's what it is, And for me, I really love art that can enable us to move forward, to recognize our past, can comfort us. And in its highest best, it reminds us that we're not alone in the world. And that's all I'm interested in. That's what I want to do,
So you mentioned signing for Sony and then presumably not being with Sony. What have been the sort of, looking back on your time, what do you think have been the sort of pivotal moments in your career as you've journeyed through?
If are we talking musically or in terms of
Either,
physical?
really, I suppose. Yes, musically, but I just wondered if there were things that really sort of, I don't know, when things solidified for you about what your mission was, about what you were here to do, about were there circumstances or certain key events you look back and you thought, yeah, that was a moment of transition for me.
Yeah. Well, I think the honest sojourner is still trying to figure all of that stuff out, which I am, and I don't think I'll ever get a comfortable grasp on life itself ever. I don't think I will. I just wake up each day and I do my best. But I think one of the pivotal moments was back in 1988, 87. I'd just become a dad, and I was asked by Tear Fund to go to, we were originally going to India, but they couldn't get us visas. So we went to Thailand, and I was exposed to poverty for the very first time. So I was about 27 years old. And obviously, you're aware of poverty, you're aware of injustices, but to actually sit amongst and I visited a slum in Bangkok City that was divided by a railway track. And if you over the other side of this railway track was the slum city. And we went into this metal shack where a disabled, physically disabled young Thai girl was there. And she wasn't allowed out because she was disabled. It was just at that point that, that was shunned in Thai society, apparently. And she lived in this metal shack, and but she bowed to me low and held her hands together. And I just sat with her, and I left that tin hut knowing that life had changed. It was as simple as that, so that would now, but and musically it broke my music into as well, because to that point, I'd been involved in the sort of evangelical gospel church movement, and I was singing about happy fixes, come to God, blah blah blah, all that stuff, not immune to life's tempests, as it were, but thinking that that's and I just suddenly realized that that didn't add up, that didn't add up, that made no sense within the all this stuff, the promises, whatever it might be. And that kind of just broke me. It didn't mean that I lost the sense of the divine or anything like that. It enhanced it, if anything. It made it bigger. It enlarged that vision. And at that moment, I think it enlarged my vision for music too, because I realized that there was so much more to write about.
Well,
And,
while we're on that, can I ask you about that? Because we've just been having this conversation. It's a circular conversation. We keep coming back to this notion of, is there such a thing as an interventionist God? And, people who say, God gave me a parking space, hallelujah, that kind of thing. We go round and round, address these things. Nick is of an opinion that, who's the co-host here, I should say, that there probably is an interventionist God, but not in the way we thought there was. And I'm of the, nah, I don't really think that's how the universe works. How do you see the divine now? What do you see God as a being, or the ground of being, or as a figure? Do you like the word God even? So there's a question or two.
Do I like the word God? Some days. There are days, Joe, when I'm torn between belief and non-belief these days. Yeah, you know, yeah. There are days when I just think there's nothing else. I just think it's the you know, and I don't want that. I so want there to be more. You know, do I believe in that if God exists, does He care and love? Of course, but He just seems to be so distant and so quiet, and I struggle some days. You know, I faith and doubt. They run parallel to me. And I don't mean to insult anyone or I'm just being honest. You know, that I wouldn't call myself a churchgoer anymore, but occasionally, you know, walking through a valley or by the side of some beautiful place, or I'm on tour somewhere, or something that whispers to you, then there's a scene in Chariots of Fire. I always remember it, where Eric Liddell, who was running, you know, and his fiance doesn't want him to run because she wants them to go to be missionaries in China, which they did in the end go, and he died out there. But he won the gold medal before that. But this was before the Olympics, and he turns. She says we should go, and you should stop this running stuff, you know. And he turns and he looks out to the sea, the horizon. He said, "But when I run, I feel His pleasure."
Ah, oh, it's such a great point.
And I think there are some moments through a year where I feel His or her pleasure, and that can be enough for me. I don't need the big fix. I don't need the hoobie jubies, whatever people want to do, you know. Yeah, you know. So I'm torn, especially right now. Our project has been heavily involved in the West Bank in Palestine for the last 10 years. And we've worked in Gaza. When I see the way things are going, I don't feel any blame to the divine, because we're doing this. But I have to ask, where are you? You know, I have to ask, where are you?
I mean, it is hell on earth. It's happening right there before our eyes.
Yeah, it is. There is. It's just insufferable. And so it breaks and it gets mended. It breaks and it gets mended. I've just become a dad again.
Wow. I'm 64. Congratulations.
Thank you. Before I started talking to you, I've just been down the local play area, you know, and with this little one-year-old in my hands. I read the news every day, and then I hold him. And it's such a dichotomy. It's such a what future is there? This sounds all very depressing, but it's not to me. I find it that there's a realism in walking this way. Yeah. I'm always looking for that thing, those whispers of a bigger picture, those whispers of a better place, divinity.
We've been talking about something called the Nooms. I trust you haven't come across the Nooms, but because we think we might have invented it. But it's like, you know, these numinous moments that catch you by surprise, numinous, sacred, you know, just a sense of somehow this moment is holy. And I sort of get that going to gigs sometimes. I get it in, you know, in nature primarily. I get it on the beach looking out to sea. And I know many, I'm sure I speak with confidence, so many people will experience a Nooms when they're with you, because you're mirroring the reality of life in them and somehow making it safe to talk about.
Well, that's a lovely thought.
That, I think, is your artistic gift to us. The way a poet can touch us, but you do it with music, and it's mind-blowing.
Thank you. If that's what I'm doing, then that's very worthy thing to do, you know. And I feel, you know, like when I come off stage and then people say the most amazing things, and they say, "Thank you, I was here, but now I feel this," whatever it might be, then I'm very humbled by that. I don't know where to put myself or look, how to even respond to it. But at the same time, if that's all, I just think honesty is just this.
There's something of the divine in honesty.
You're not making it up, you know. I know that, from where I came from in terms of my that sort of Christian background, when I was a teenager, and as I said, I was looking for a tribe. I didn't go there. My parents didn't take me there. There was a youth club there with girls, so that's what took me there. And then, like, you know, if you want to play for the football team, you got to go to church every Sunday. So it was, you know, but I'm sure some of those people would be appalled now by these right. things that I say, but I just, and so I hope, you know, and yeah, that's all we can do.
Right? Let me say something, Martin. In a moment, I would like to reveal my favorite Martin Joseph track. I feel like it's definitely not the coolest or the most beautiful, but it's the one that I sing all the time. It resonates in my heart. But before we go, I want to know what, before I reveal that, yeah. I would love to know if there are any songs that you feel particularly resonate, proud of, just, you know, pivotal, really important songs to you that you've written, so that we can all go and listen to them straight afterwards.
Well, I don't know about you listening to them, but there was I wrote a song called Treasure the Questions in 1988, which was, you know, that was a big sort of flip, you know, to the proclaiming this and proclaiming that, you know. Yeah, that would be one of them. And then I suppose I would point people towards recent material in the last 5 or 6 years, I think.
So would I.
You know, that's where I would say that the you know, the best, the my opus is becoming, you know, where I'm really, you know, confident, not confident, but can look at it and think, well, that's decent work, you know. You know, I don't look back at my whole library of albums and think I'm proud of everyone. I'm not really that, you know. I'm musically good and better, but I think what I'm doing now, like I said earlier on, you know, and Chapel Porth Beach, just to circle that, it took me 3 months to write that song because this was an incredible story about Mark and Vicky. Like, I'd been asked to write one the year before. It was about a soup kitchen, and that was, you know, beautiful subject, but fairly easy. You just find individuals within who go to that soup kitchen, a bit like Ralph McTell did with Streets of London. Yeah. You tell their stories, nice little chorus, you've got it, punk. That, you know, but this one was different because...
Man, when you get to the last line of that song, it's a joker.
I wanted to do Vicky and Mark justice, their beautiful story. I had to pay homage to the RNLI. I had to, also, there was this mysterious surfboarder who's never been found, who raised the alarm, all this sort of stuff. So I rewrote it. And, you know, people say, oh, yeah, I wrote this song in 10 minutes. I don't care. Is it any good? That's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly.
So no one's in any hurry to hear my next song or anybody else's. So we take take your time. I think if I look at a song like Chapel Porth Beach, I can say, you know what? Yeah, I'm a decent songwriter now. And I'm not saying that I always have been. You know?
Well, you're a brilliant songwriter, if you don't mind me saying so. So, okay, I'm going to tell you my favourite. It can't be compared because it's from a different era and it belongs to a different time.
Okay.
But the song that I love, that my wife will tell you irritates her because I sing it so much, is Liberal Backslider. I'm sorry if it's not cool, but it could have been the anthem of our podcast, Mike. It really, you could have written it for us.
Well, you can have it. You can have it for that.
We've all experienced pain that you describe. The irony.
I know. I'm happy with your choice, Joe.
That's so good to know. Yeah, thanks. How does copyright work? Can we play it on the podcast?
Absolutely. You play it every time. Yeah.
That's going on the podcast.
I can do you an ID so you're listening to, and then you can play that as the start.
That's great. Thanks. Now, your schedule looks punishing to the untrained eye. I mean, I was on your website. Just look at the tour schedule. It goes on and on. I know you've just come back from America, haven't you?
How
long were you out there?
We were there about 3 weeks.
You've got a lot of friends out there.
Yeah, I worked. Go down California and Oregon, and then I go across Canada in spring, and East Coast America, and then Europe. And
do you cope with that schedule?
Well,
are you vegan? What do you do? You eat a lot of greens? What's the secret? I mean, I've clearly abused my body, but you look better than, I mean, you've aged a lot better than me.
Oh, bless you.
Your life looks crazy. How do you do it? Well,
I guess I'm burning off a lot of calories every night on stage. You know, I play hard for 2 hours, whatever, and play every show like it's going to be the last one I ever play. My second wife Justine, she had two beautiful marriages, and Justine is she's a very healthy person, so she's improved things, should we say, since we met 10 years ago. And so I, it, but it's still not great. Chocolate is my. Well, here's one thing. I've been teetotal all my life, not because of any abstinence, but because the taste of alcohol immediately makes me sick. So but I make up for it for a love of chocolate. So, you know, but I'd still play golf. Yeah. I still, you know, try to run upstairs and stuff like that. Excellent. So I stay fairly fit, but things ache now where they didn't used to before, you know, the old back and that stuff. So try to look after myself because I want to keep on doing this. I really do, you know. I mean, Springsteen's, what, 75, 76?
Yes, indeed, yeah.
But I think he gets a lot more care and attention as soon as he comes off stage than I do. So,
well, we were saying before we were recording that I feel like you spent your most uncomfortable night of your life in our flat because it was this old sofa bed. Right. I don't really understand what you were doing there, but bless you, you spent the night on it. I don't think you've got any sleep. Hopefully you get a hotel now, don't you?
Well, I tried to, yeah. Back in, I still stay in what I call safe houses, you know, with friends sometimes who I know really well. But back in those days, Joe, I'm sure I was just so excited to be anywhere, so it wouldn't have made much difference, you know.
Yeah. So, well, speaking of relationships, let's talk about the relationship with your audience. I just wonder how that has sort of changed through the years, because you can sort of feel an energy when you're performing, can't you? How has it changed? And what role does the audience play in your journey, I suppose, as an artist?
Well, they're everything, you know. Yeah. Without the audience, there's no... There's no gig, there's no nothing, you know. And these days, you know, streaming has ruined income for artists. So, so playing live, you know, you ask why I play you know, so many shows, why, you know, it's probably 80, 90, 100 shows a year, is because I, you know, that's how I pay my bills, you know. But streaming, I think, you know, I average about 500,000 streams every year, which pays about £250, you know. So it's you know, you've got to improvise and do other things. But my relationship with my audience has always been fairly personal. I've always been someone who tried to connect with people. I've always written back if people write to me. You know, we've had my own little festival for a number of years. Well, we've stopped it this year after 17 years. But I've always tried to maintain an accessibility, shall we say, if people wanted to, you know, ask anything or just say thank you, whatever it might be. I always go out after shows if I can to say hello. I think each night as I'm in the dressing room, wherever I might be, you know, whether I've got a lot of people in going out or if it's just, you know, 50 or 60, whatever it might be, you know, and because, you know, when I'm playing in America, I might play someplace where that might be the case. It's only be 50, 60 people because I might not be so well known in the town or whatever, you know. But I always try to remind myself that whoever's bought a ticket, even though there's only two people there, that they deserve the best I can give them, you know, not me going on there disappointed. So I've always showed up. I've always, I remember a couple of years ago, I had my guitar stolen, you know, and I had to do the gig and it was a guitar. I still haven't had it returned, but it was a, and I thought, how am I going to do this? But as soon as I went on stage, something kicked in and I was there for those people. What had happened to me that day didn't matter. So I feel that responsibility. I'm also aware of just the possibilities that are there every night. You just don't know who's in front of you. You don't know who's come to see you, what they're carrying, what they're going through. And I've always a little reminder to myself that the potential in the room that night will never be there again. It's a unique moment. But the possibilities of what can take place through the art form are amazing. You know, you can cause people to fall in love again. You can cause people to adjust themselves to a different path, to feel comforted, to feel sad, feel happy. All of these emotions are there and are a pretext for what I'm about to do. I don't think, right, it's my job to entertain these people tonight. No, it's not. If entertainment happens, it's collateral damage. Yeah, I didn't, you know, but obviously I want people to have a good time, and we do have a good time. But my goal at the end is to have lifted these people, taken us on a journey, gone to some tough places so that we can empathize and identify, and then that we may leave that room together, united, and saying, yes, we can do this. And I think with that in mind, that's why I have a very sort of healthy personal relationship with people who have come to hear me play for years and years and years. And it's growing all the time. And it's not a massive army, but it's significant enough
Yeah,
to
sure.
allow me a career, you know. So
Yeah.
I work hard at that, but I'm so grateful to people who support the music and who come to the shows,
No,
because
that's well said.
that's
And
my
we are
bread and
grateful
butter.
to our 17 listeners, believe me.
I hear it's more than that.
Now listen, let's talk about the future a bit. What's on the horizon for you? Are there any projects or goals coming up that you're excited about?
Well, I Strap of Both Beach is about to come out, and I'm about to go on a big UK tour, which will take me through
Brilliant.
to next year, and then we go to Europe and blah blah blah, Canada. So
Yeah.
I will start working on a new album next year. I've always got lots of songs hanging around,
Yeah.
and ideas, and I have my own studio where I'm speaking to you from, so I can
Yeah.
easily, I'm sort of involved in that creative process all the time. I'm really excited by our foundation. It's extraordinary. We've never had a grant off anybody, but we've now, just through money that has been given to us by my audience, we've now given away like £750,000 across
Wow.
20 different projects in 10 years, you know. We're excited by that and how
That's
it's
amazing.
developing and those sort of things. My goal is to keep writing good songs and to
Yeah.
keep working at that, to become a better musician, to become a better writer. I think performing wise, I'm pretty, it is what it is, and I'm happy
Yeah.
with what I do. I'm aware that I say this without any sense of conceitment, know that I can go on to stage, be it 15,000 people or 50 people, and I can hold those people and give them an experience that will energize them and help them.
Yeah.
So with all that going on,
Yeah.
I feel like I'm 28, right? And I'm
Yeah,
I want to go. I want to carry
exactly.
on. I'm as hungry as I ever was for this beautiful job that I have, you know. And within that, things will develop, and I'll tell you what I'm excited about next time I see you. But
Yeah.
there's always lots of exciting
Yeah.
things going on and
So if
people I
people
meet.
want to find out where you're performing and everything, what do they do? What's the
Just
best way
go,
to do it?
yeah. Just go martinjoseph.net, and it's there. Yeah, there's tons of information these days, isn't it? But yeah,
Yeah.
Martin. It's Martin with a Y. Otherwise, you get a lawyer in Dallas or something. I don't know.
Okay, couple of quick fire questions. I can't let you go without doing
No,
this.
it's fine.
If you could do a duet with any artist, past or present, who would you love to do a duet with?
Oh, it's got to be Bruce.
Okay, excellent.
I did a whole album of Bruce Springsteen covers, which basically his camp endorsed some years
Oh,
ago.
wow.
A guy called Dave Marsh, who was wrote biographies of Bruce, and so I
Yeah.
went on the Bruce Springsteen show on the Sirius XM or whatever it's called, and
Yeah.
so I'd love that phone call. But on the other hand, I'd be so daunted by it. So I got to duet with Janicey and my last on an album 2 years ago. So that was lovely. And I've toured with a lot of superstars in the day
Yeah,
too.
sure.
So
Yeah.
that's been nice. But so no one in particular, but it's probably got to be Bruce or Paul Simon, someone like that, you know.
Okay, wonderful. And how about favorite places to perform, favorite cities or favorite venues?
Favorite places to perform. There's so many great little venues around the planet that I play. I love playing on the West Coast in Canada, Vancouver and those sort of places. But I suppose my favorite place to play is probably St. David's Hall in Cardiff. We brought out a double album live from there last year, and sadly, that's under threat now by the Live Nation, and all those guys want to turn it into a big rock venue. But it's a place I've been playing for 40 odd years in the center of Cardiff, and I hope it emerges from all that corporate stuff and continues to book artists like me.
Well, listen, Martin, it has been such a joy to have you on the
It's my
podcast.
pleasure, sir.
Listen, thank you so much for being here. We wish you every success for the future. Keep writing these beautiful songs. Do encourage everyone to go and listen to Chapel Porth immediately. But Martin Joseph, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Joe. And I'd be honored for you to use Liberal Backslider, mate. That'd be fabulous. Free of charge, too.
Well, that was Joe interviewing Martin Joseph. Lovely stuff. Lots of interesting stuff in there. Mm. In fact, I actually worked with Martin. I must have met him before you did then, because I worked with him in 1989. Mm. It's no doubt etched on his memory.
Mm. Oh, it will be.
In Penarth, when I was in a theatre company, we did an event together. and he was working with a mime artist then, I think.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yeah. He used to work with a mime artist.
Yeah. So we did a thing together. And the only thing I can remember is complaining about the amount of gear he had on stage, because we couldn't act with it all. You know, there was amplifiers and everything everywhere. We were going, oh, you have to move all those pedals, mate. We can't do our stuff. So, yeah, no doubt that's a seminal moment. That might have been what turned him away from doing those kind of Christian events.
I would imagine so, yeah.
The behaviour of those idiot actors. Yeah, so that's a really interesting interview. I liked, you know, what he said about his journey of faith, you know, and, you know, the bits where he's refreshingly honest, where, you know, he struggles to believe and then sometimes he does believe and, you know, I think it's really important to hear.
Yes, exactly. And I love that he said his guitar is a cheap psychiatrist, you know, the fact that he's able to just take all of his journey into his music. And although he said he's not proud of it all, and, you know, I can understand that, you know, it's like podcasts, some are better than others, aren't they? But it's, but you know, it's great that it's there and he's just able to, I guess, to go back and reflect on it. Or I like the fact that he says he doesn't need the Hoobie Jubies anymore.
Yes,
and
who does, really?
I related to that.
Yes.
I also thought, wasn't it incredible that, you know, you get 500,000 streams and you get £250.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Pounds. It's, I mean, it's shameful. Absolutely shameful.
Back in the day, if you sold 500,000 records, you'd have hundreds of thousands of pounds, I would imagine. But, yeah, no.
I think for me, the thing I took... Well, it's two things. One is, you know, the idea that of keeping improving as you get older and not settling. And I think, actually, that's something that, in a way, the more successful artists have a problem with. Because you've peaked in a way much earlier on, whereas those of us labouring way down in the lower divisions, you know, we always think there's room for improvement, really. Mm. So you know, I think that's great. And the other thing was about turning up,
yes,
which I think is a very underrated ability.
Absolutely.
You know, I think the secret of life half the time is just turning up and being present.
Yes.
And giving of your best, no matter who's there or no matter what project you're working on. I think that's really important. So, you know,
I know we've said this many times, but the only place you're ever going to experience the divine is in the present moment. And I think if he is the artist up front is saying, I'm giving everything, I'm really here in this moment. I don't care if there's 200, 2,000, 20,000 people that, like, I'm here now. And he's sort of inviting you to be present. And I figure, well, there's always an opportunity for the nooms to be there when you're present to the moment. So, you know, that's the artistic gift, isn't it, really? I think the other thing is, you know, having seen him, he's annoyingly fit, Nick.
I think.
And it did, you know, it made me consider my life choices. What might have happened if I was teetotal and didn't love cheese the way I do?
Yeah, but you wouldn't have been Joe then, would you? You'd have been Joseph, and that would have been appalling, really. So, you know, we are what we are, but we can always get better. So that's good.
We do owe Martin a huge debt of gratitude. Mm. I thought it was a lovely interview. I hope people found it interesting. Yeah, I'd be fascinated to know what others make of it. Do send an email to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Also, thank you to everyone who's been sending in stuff about the interventionist. God, that rumbles on. We've had some really good feedback on that. So keep sending your emails in. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, certainly. Big thank you to Martin. And of course, if you want to support him, or indeed any other artist, may I say, the best thing to do is buy their work.
Yes.
And you can do that from his website. I'll put a link in the show notes. And we're going to actually play out with a song, aren't we?
We sure are.
And I wonder which song it's going to be.
I wonder.
I'm a liberal backslider. I've been sliding about 10 years. People ask me how I'm doing and I come from all their fears. I'm swearing like a trooper and I'm drinking like a bum. I'm a liberal backslider and it sure is a lot of fun. I've been following these footsteps now for many a year gone by. but you always upset someone there, no matter how you try. Well, the good things they're forgotten if a bad thing comes around. Now all these stones are flying, they're gonna knock me to the ground. I am a liberal backslider, sliding about 10 years. People ask me how I'm doing and I come from all their fears. I'm swearing like a trooper and I'm drinking like a bomb. I'm a liberal backslider and it sure is a lot of fun. Well, I take a stand on justice and I take a stand on race. I'm gonna take me a TV evangelist and punch him in the face. I sing about the hope that's in me and ask why the poor aren't fed. But if I don't toe the party line, it'd be better if I were dead. I am a liberal backslider, sliding about 10 years. People ask me how I'm doing and I come from all their fears. I'm swearing like a trooper and I'm drinking like a bum. I'm a liberal backslider and it sure is a lot of fun. So I'll be asking for forgiveness then until the day I die. Though I can't be sure of what I've done, I think I'd better try. Well, thank God you're not the jury, and thank God I'm not the judge. Here's to a bigger picture, here's to the bigger love. I am a liberal backslider, sliding about 10 years. People ask me how you're doing, brother, I come from all their fears. I'm swearing like a trooper and I'm drinking like a bomb. I'm a liberal backslider and it sure is a lot of fun. I am a liberal backslider, sliding about 10 years. People ask me how I'm doing and I come from all their fears. Well, I'm swearing like a trooper and I'm drinking like a bomb. I'm a liberal backslider, and it sure is a lot of fun. I'm a liberal backslider, and it sure is a lot of fun.